for something like breaking the law or for, you know, some other thing that the world views as reproachable. But that is not contrary to Christ. I mean, to the world, it's reproachable to preach the things that I preach about sin. You know, it's a reproach. But I don't care. You know, it's a sin in the world to be judgmental of other people. Now, they think Jesus taught that. And I'm not being judgmental of other people. I'm just declaring what the judgment of God is concerning activities. The people I judge not, because the people, I was a doer of those activities that God has declared his judgment is against. See, I was a doer of those things just like everybody else. And so if I were to condemn them, I'd condemn myself. But it's that God should deliver us from those, from that behavior and so on and so forth. A lot of things I say about women is in bad taste in this day, and it's reproachable. I've been reproached for that, for saying my wife should be in subjection to me. Oh, I've gotten reproach. But, you know what, that doesn't disqualify you, because that's the truth. We trust in the living God. For what? You know, what, do we just trust him? Like, well, whatever. We trust him to do what he says he will do. What he says he will do is give us grace. He has given us grace, we who are his chosen. And the grace of God teaches us something. The grace of God which bringeth salvation, which leads to salvation, according to Titus chapter 2, teaches us that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live righteously, soberly, and godly in this present world. He is our Savior. Becoming godly is part of what he intends to do with us. That's because of his love. We have to appear. When he appears, we are going to be like him. It's not going to be suddenly he's going to just sweep everything under the rug and say, oh great, you know, the last thing you did on, yeah, you were having sex with that prostitute and her pimp shot you in the back of the head. That's how you died, but you believed that I rose from the dead. And you had confessed my name that one time in church 20 years prior. Now you lived like the devil ever since then. But believe it or not, you're saved. Yeah, right. That's not the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's bad news, man. You could just walk like that, then Christ is the minister of sin. Those of you who walk that way, Christ is the minister of sin to you. That's what you were going to make him. Not that he is, but the Christ that you serve, or that you declare, or that your gospel preaches, is a Christ who ministers sin, who is the minister of sin. That's what their teaching makes him into, but he is not that. That's why he is not theirs. That's why he says to them, I never knew you. Depart from ye who work iniquity. Verse 11. These things command and teach. Okay, yeah. Verse 12. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity. Now, Timothy was not an elder man. I've heard it said, I forgot who told me, and I don't know if this is true or not, but that he was a man of about 40 at this point. And being 35 now, in 5 years, I can't imagine thinking of myself as anything less than somewhat youthful. You know, men who are 50 and so on, they're of full age, 60. I look forward to being that far along in my walk, because I think I should have grown so much wiser in that time. I'm still but a youth. Now, I've somewhat proved myself. By God, or God has proved me, rather. You know. And that is not to be despised, even in this youth. But be an example. And that's what I want to be. In word, conversation, which is behavior. And when I say word and then words, you know, it's word and your behavior. In charity is love, is the word in Greek. And then in spirit, faith, and purity. Example of purity. Think about that. I when I look at the way that the apostle speaks in the letters he wrote, it is so contrary to the way Christians think these days. Purity, pureness is supposed to be like, is a myth to them. It's something unattainable. At least in this present world, it's unattainable. But according to the Apostle Paul, it's necessary. It's something we're supposed to exemplify. Pureness. Love. You know, they'll say love, you know, but pureness? You know, having a pure conscience? Well, they'll say that comes from... They teach a pure conscience. You know how they get their consciences pure? They sear them with a hot iron. To the point where they don't even care about the fact that they sin anymore. Or they kind of brush it off. Or it's more like this, that, yeah, they care about the sin, but they don't seek the righteousness which Christ has promised. And the fact that they don't have that perfect righteousness doesn't bother them at all. Their consciences are seared. They're not bugged by the fact that they're still sinners. Why? Because they expect that they're going to be sinners. That's why we even have terms, like the Lutherans talk about sinner saints. Christians are sinner saints, sinner dash saints. You know, it's like we're saints. It's a contradiction term. It's like being a hairy bald or, I don't know why I thought of that one, but, I guess you could be bald and hairy. It's like being, you know, a black white. Now I'm thinking of people who are of mixed race, and I don't want to insult them. I personally think all that stuff is just stupid anyways. We're all part of one family. The racial stuff. I mean, it's out there. It's a big issue, and people are, you know, all up in arms about it. And I, you know, in some sense, you know, we all suffer under it. We all suffer because there's people in other races that don't like us because of our race, and there's people in our race who don't like people of other races because of their race, and it's sort of like you don't know who's coming, who's going, and who hates you, and who doesn't.